like I said, I mean, there's tons of fun to look at from the G20 summit. And really, it is just way too simple to mock Trump in any of these kind of settings. It really is. And, you know, like today, the tweet that I saw from him, you know, he couldn't wait to go to Bush's funeral. I'm going, really? Yeah, that's not quite the way you'd want to put that. I know he wrote that tweet. There are a lot of tweets he writes that then you go, there's no way he wrote that. He wrote that one. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, well, maybe what the shenanigans and over the weekend, and also some thoughts on George W.H. Bush's passing. I've asked our good friend Propane Jane to come talk with us. Jane, thanks for taking time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So kind of a little buffoonery this weekend from Argentina. My favorite part is the walking away from the Argentinian president saying, get me out of here.
That was my favorite, too.
Get off my lawn!
Bless his heart. I think he really just had no idea how to get out of there and wanted to get out of there.
Yeah.
I think it was a pretty honest declaration on his part.
But, you know, wasn't he supposed to stay for the photo and make a goofy face?
The body language, every photo that came out of that entire summit, he looks miserable. He
yep.
looks like he's completely out of his league. He looks like nobody likes him. He looks like the bully at summer camp who has alienated everyone but has no clue as to why or how that happened and is just resentful of everyone because he's on the outside.
No, yeah, and there isn't a picture of him looking reasonable anywhere.
No.
I don't even think you could get one if you... You know, by accident. I mean, every photo is, like you said, you know, of him just looking like he's absolutely being tortured, or, you know, like the kid whose parents, you know, made him dress up and go to grandma's for Sunday dinner.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I think his reputation precedes him in these situations. I mean, certainly he has vilified a number of these countries and their leaders. And so when it's time to meet with them, you know, there's already this bad blood in the air. But beyond that, I mean, I think these are serious people who recognize that he is not serious and that he can't be taken seriously and that he doesn't know what he's doing. And then there's also the fact that they don't want to look guilty by association with him either.
Or stupid. I mean, I kind of felt sorry for I kind of felt sorry for the guy from Argentina just standing there kind of looking around going, what do I do?
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, they don't really want to take the photo with him. They don't really want to be forced into these awkward moments with him. But at the same time, I mean, they know that he is what's standing in as the representation for the United States on this world stage. So I think they're very conflicted about it. You know, again, if you just sort of juxtapose this with Obama, right? I mean, he was like the rock star at these things. They gathered around, you know, he was the life of the party. And in many ways, obviously, that helped with these deals that we're making, you know, across the world. But we're not even able to do that just because there isn't even a basic camaraderie and level of respect for the person who's leading our country right now, and it's sad.
But we got the best deals ever. I mean, you, this weekend that we solved all the world's problems.
Except for climate change.
Well, because it doesn't exist.
I mean, such an embarrassment, I mean, right? I mean, you know, these legitimate, you know, news organizations from the rest of the world have obviously covered what's been going on with the wildfires.
Yeah.
You know, they've covered these hurricanes that we've seen year after year after year just devastate people on the coastline. And think about how much money has been raised, not just here in America, but from all over the world because of climate disasters that have happened on our actual soil. And then here we are, the lone holdout when it comes to actually addressing climate change. I mean, it just looks very bad. And there's really just an absence of leadership from America on this issue right now.
Well, it's just because we have the cleanest air and cleanest water ever. didn't you hear?
Well, I mean, I think the sad reality of this is that, you know, it's the way it actually works, and I'm no, you know, climate scientist, but the countries who pollute the most and who put the most detrimental impact into the system, we put all that stuff up in the air, and it floats over to the other part of the world, right? And it actually ends up affecting other people in other countries who are more destitute than we are, certainly. And so it's actually really quite arrogant of us to be one of the biggest, you know, contributors to the problem, but then be doing nothing to solve it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but, you know, look, I mean, and in Trump's defense, you know, China, India are much worse. But we've got to figure out how to, as a globe, figure this out, because eventually it's all of us. And this is the weird thing that, you know, you go, if you're ticked off about the caravans coming here from Central America now, just wait a couple years of doing nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And just wait until literally there are places that don't even have access to clean water at all. Like, and there's no, you know, charity, and, you know, you send your money in over the internet or however you do it, or you make a phone call on these telethons to get clean water to people. But, hey, that's not going to be enough. And what are we actually doing about that? And I think, you know, to have somebody there who's in complete denial of the problem doesn't help at all. And, you know, it really goes to show how ignorant he is, because you would think that these would be things that would be layups for him, right? Like, in the midst of all of the Mueller probe going on and, you know, things that have happened on a foreign policy level that haven't gone his way and that have made him look really inept, actually, you would think that these would be easy things to get on board with. But he just simply can't do it because the Republican Party can't do it. That's how far they've come from Nixon at this point.
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. I mean, Nixon, you know, for all of his faults, and there were a lot, the paranoia, the insanity, you know, the craziness, all of that. Still, the EPA, you know, OSHA, you know, come on. You couldn't get either one of those. You can't even get them to say those words today without saying we want to destroy them.
Yeah, they can't, because they can't risk alienating their corporate donors. And they have a lot of buddies in coal and oil and gas and, you know, fossil fuels who, you know, they don't want to disappoint. And so they have to maintain this really hardline stance against doing anything on climate change in order to please those people and continue to get their campaign contributions.
Yeah, I mean, it's just plain nuts where we are.
Yeah,
just plain nuts. I wanted to get your thoughts. You know, obviously the passing of President George H.W. Bush. You being from Texas, I wanted to get some of your thoughts on H.W. Fan, not fan. Where on the scale did you put him?
Well, I would say that we kind of have to think of things politically now, like pre-Trump and post-Trump.
Okay.
And I think what's happening with the Bushes, certainly, you know, what we're seeing with G.H.W. Bush, but then also to some degree have also seen in some ways in regards to his son, G.W.B., is that you may not have really cared for them, and you may have been, you know, like diametrically opposed to their policies and what they put forth during their presidencies. But when you look at them in comparison to Trump, it's like no matter how bad they were in your eyes, in your estimation, there are certain things about the office and the way that they respected the office and honored the office on just a basic level and didn't really go out and hold like overt Klan rallies and literally, you know, disrespect broad swaths of people, that you start to kind of, you know, try to go, okay, well, actually, that was a different type of republicanism.
Right.
And I think that they're getting a certain like shout out and level of respect right now just because relative to Trump, they actually are starting to look better. But I mean, again, me personally, I was never a fan of either of them.
No, I wasn't either. The only time I'd ever been laid off, the only time I'd ever lost work, each one of them were in the White House. So I was unemployed for a bit of time with each of them. So I always remember that. But and there were very few policies I agreed with George W. Bush on.
Yeah.
H.W., there were some things, you know, Americans with Disabilities Act. You know, one of the first, you know, he was the first president to talk about the AIDS crisis. Not overwhelmingly, but, you know, they did do something, which was a huge departure from the Reagan years.
Right.
Still not trusted, you know, head of the CIA scares me. Always did.
Right.
Selling his soul to Reagan to be vice president. Not good. Still use the voodoo economics thing.
Yep.
Good on him for that. But mostly a mixed bag, to be honest.
And even Desert Storm.
Which we probably shouldn't have done. Look back on, you know, how that all played out.
Yeah, I mean, so I certainly think, you know, the record and the legacy, I mean, I think it still comes down to whether or not politically you identify as a Republican or a Democrat as to how you perceive their presidencies. But again, I think just in terms of the level of respect and dignity and honor that is to be, you know, a part of that office, I just think that Trump is such the antithesis of that a lot of these people are looking better by comparison, and that's what's happening.
Do you think he was, because some are saying, you know, he was kind of the last president that we didn't look through with, you know, with absolute ideological eyes. Do you put any credence in that statement? I mean, because, you know,
no.
I look at him and I, you know, I never put him in the absolute ideologue category.
Yeah, I didn't either.
You know, policy-wise, I disagreed with a lot of things, but I never questioned, you know, as you've said, you know, the office, you know, his respect for the office and that kind of stuff. But, you know, I don't remember him being, you know, this extremist. I mean, I look at, you know, W, who, you know, he was handled by extremists. So by, you know, just by being where he was, it was what it was. And I look at this guy who's just nuts. But for me, you know, H.W. was just a guy who, you know, he was kind of middle of the road by today's standards.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and I think, you know, in the days that have, you know, ensued since his death, certainly there have been people on both sides that are putting forth their tributes. And then also people that are saying, hey, what's going on with all these tributes? Don't you remember all of these X, Y, and Z terrible things that he did as well? But I think, you know, in terms of, like, social issues and the culture war, and when you belong to a marginalized group, I think that the climate that we're living in today, in terms of the racism and the homophobia and the xenophobia and the Islamophobia, right, and the transphobia, I mean, there's a phobia about all of these different identities. And I think even though that was years in the past, right, before we had sort of advanced and made all of this progress in terms of the rights on paper and the acceptance in the general society, you didn't have, even if that person was a Republican, like this really overt call to hatred and to vilification of these marginalized groups the way that we're seeing from Trump today.
Right.
So I think that, you know, if you were a marginalized person during G.H.W. Bush's presidency, you know, even though, you know, it was still, you know, back at the late 80s, early 90s, and we hadn't really made all of the advancements that we've made to this point, it still was at the dog whistle stage at that point. And Trump has obviously taken it way past that. And so I think it's easier to really have a lot stronger feelings in either direction, either for or against.
Yeah, I can see that. I just don't remember, you know, H.W. being that dog whistle racist. I, you know, for me, you know, when it really became very apparent was Pat Buchanan's run in 92. You know, that's when, you know, the you know, the white supremacist, you know, movement, I think, really, you know, came out of the closet, if you will. Or at least in my view. I'm curious your thought.
Well, he had the Willie Horton ad, right? Which by, you know, a lot of estimations is sort of a seminal moment that you list in terms of the Southern strategy. And it was just that iteration at that particular time that worked for him. But, you know, again, I think that the voters who were targeted by an ad like that understood it, and that's why they didn't vote for him. And that's also why they, you know, coalesced to actually get Bill Clinton elected twice.
Yeah, I didn't vote for HW. I voted for Dukakis. And, you know, look, Dukakis ran a terrible campaign on top of it. So, I mean, the Willie Horton ad was one thing, but he still ran a terrible campaign. And the picture of him with the, you know, the small head in the tank didn't help either.
Yeah, I mean, not at all. But, I mean, I think Reagan also benefited from, I mean, Bush actually benefited from Reagan in that sense. You know, that there was still, I think, that sentiment lingering from those 8 years that people wanted to, you know, give Reagan, like, another chance at being an additional term of that. But at the same time, you know, I think that Daddy Bush also suffers in a lot of ways from his son Bush. It just sort of brings the whole family down, and this is another reason why Jeb Bush did so poorly. It was sort of a cumulative effect with that entire family that, you know, with each version it just kind of got worse.
The gene pool's kind of thinned out is what you're saying.
Exactly, but, you know, at the same time, I think the reason why it is so striking in this moment is because, you know, you do have Donald Trump, and, like, you know, they've, of course, you know, they've agreed for him to come to the funeral, but they've said he can't speak, which I think was a pretty diplomatic and graceful way to put forth what I think all of us are just cringing at the thought of him delivering a eulogy in that setting.
I was actually looking forward to it. Let's just see how irreverent and crazy he can get.
But, you know, but I think that people in the Republican Party want to bring those two sides of the Republican Party together, and they want those kind of, like, Bush Republicans to not be as repulsed as they've been kind of passive-aggressively over the last couple of years at Trumpism. They want to bring those people back into the fold because, you know, they're at risk of losing them in some ways.
Yeah, these so-called compassionate conservatives.
Exactly, exactly.
Who are thrilled to take your food stamps away, and, you know, you know, all of the stuff that, you know, the major cuts that they made. Yeah, yeah. The one thing I remember about W. Bush's years, every year during his budget proposal, they wanted to cut the community supplemental food program, which was, you know, a very small program that gave groceries to seniors, and you know, like fresh produce and stuff. And I just thought it was cruel and it was mean, and it wasn't even a lot of money. I mean, it wasn't even a drop in the bucket,
right?
But it was just the messaging that came with that. You know, screw you.
Yeah.
But again, this is who they are.
Right.
I wanted to get your thoughts real quick on this Dutch story. I don't know if you saw this. This guy, 69 years old, he wants to change his name. Or, I mean, he wants to change his birthday.
Oh, God.
He says he should, instead of being 69, he wants to be 49. So he wants to go back and change the birthday. Now, the court said you can feel 20 years younger. You can look 20 years younger, but you can't change your birthday. And the argument here is, since you brought up marginalized communities, this is an attack, they're saying, on the transgender community. That they're saying, well, you know, this guy's just making the argument that what you were born at birth is what you should remain. I'm curious your thoughts.
But isn't he wanting to do that so he can date younger women on an online
dating? Well, that's part of it.
Dating service?
That was part of it. But, you know, from what other people are saying is this is an attack on the transgender community.
That's my first time hearing that.
Oh, okay, because, you know, I had some interaction with this because, you know, even I'm kind of going, you know, I grew up in the 70s. You know, you what is. And, you know, back then they told, you know, ethnic jokes, and that was fine. Well, you can't do that today, and I understand it, and you don't do it. But, you know, you go back and you think about, you know, guys were guys, girls were girls, and we're in this weird kind of moment. And I'm okay with it. I'm struggling with the terms.
Well, I'm struggling with why someone would go to that length just to sort of troll another group of people.
Because they're mean.
I mean, ultimately, you know, I feel like there's enough things going on, like enough people that need help out of a bad situation, that somebody who has the time to do that is really just exhibiting their own privilege to even be worried about that in the first place. So, I mean, I'm not taking that guy seriously, and I think that's a false equivalence if that's ultimately what his goal is.
Now, there's part of me that looks at it, because I read a couple of stories on it. I'm going, this can't be realistic. This can't be true. And you're right. I mean, he was claiming that work discrimination and he did want to date on Tinder. But, you know, there are those who would, you know, then take that to the next step. And, see? It's just kind of, we live in really just bizarre times.
I think we live in bizarre times, and I think that is also just pathognomonic of a certain demographic of people who, you know, happen to be white males in most cases, who have had most of the power, most of the privilege, and most by a lot, like 90-something, 98, 99% to this point. And anytime another group gets new rights, it then becomes this vast conspiracy to discriminate against people who've had them all along and haven't had to fight for them. So, I mean, that's my summation on that.
Yeah, well, again, yeah. it takes me back to, I really hate white guys.
Don't hate them, just outvote them.
Because, you know, I don't know. The only people who've ever screwed me over are white guys. It's the only time I've ever been cheated.
Yeah, well, if enough of us get on the side that, you know, it turns out that way and we get out and vote, then there's got to be more of us than them.
Yeah, well, that seems, well, we'll see. I'm looking forward to 2020 with great hope and anticipation. Anyway, Jane, I appreciate the time and the thoughts. Weird week.
Yeah, it has been. Yeah. That means that the end is near.
I hope you don't mean that in the total sense, but we will see. Jane, always great talking with you. Thank you.
You too. Have a great week.
Our good friend Propane Jane. Maybe the end is here and is nearer, and I just don't know it. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. It's desperate times, so desperate measures we explore. Marching on the Capitol.